Hello, I'm Dan Masterson, host of Strategy Talk. With me today are Austin Bay and Jim Dunnigan. Austin is an author, columnist, blogger, and contributor to StrategyPage.com. Jim is a military analyst, consultant for the U.S. military, and well-known author. On Strategy Talk, we discuss current events with our own unique twist. We report news as history. Welcome, Jim and Austin. Today we're going to talk a little bit about Iran. Ahmadinejad said a telling blow against global arrogance is going to be struck on February 11th, which is the 31st anniversary of the Islamic Revolution. Was it just a couple of days ago or yesterday they launched the rocket into space and had a satellite with some mice in it, which was interesting. And then they've announced that they're going to execute 9 dissidents before the 11th. And the Green Revolution, or the Green Movement there in Iran, has announced that they're also going to have protests on the 11th. So it looks like the 11th is building to a very, very interesting day, and probably this is going to be a very, very interesting year inside Iran.
Well, yes and no. You know, Iran right now is similar to America during the revolution, you know, about 2 centuries or so ago. The big problem during the revolution was that only about a third of the people were behind it. Another third were loyal to the king. Another third didn't really give a damn. They were just waiting to see which side would, you know, come out on top. Iran has a similar situation. A lot of people... about a third, 20%, numbers vary depending on who you talk to and the time of day, are behind the clerical dictatorship, for want of a better term, that's running the country. At least 20%, possibly a third, that's where I came up with this American Revolution metaphor, are actively, increasingly actively, against the current government. And I suspect that at least 50% don't care, or they care, but they don't want to get involved. I mean, they're just worn down. You know, as Austin commented off air, you know, most Iranians feel cheated. And I replied, yeah, they've had a bad couple of centuries. The Iranians have a sense of entitlement, which is typical in countries that have had a long run of success. China is another example. The Chinese have also had a bad couple of centuries. Those damn Europeans, Westerners in general. And while China is making a comeback, the Iranians are not. And I think that's why most Iranians, especially expatriate Iranians, just don't feel like it's their year, their century, their whatever.
Right. Now, Austin, you wrote an article on some of the I like the title of it, Bombast, Revolt, and Bombs. Might address a little bit about the bombastic attitude of their president. And does he ever follow through on any of these threats? I mean, can we match his bombast actually to actions?
Well, Dan, let me answer that first. Heaven help us if he does.
Right.
Heaven help the target, if that target happens to be, and typically they focus on Israel and the United States, but other targets could be the United Arab Emirates, whom they do not like, even though that's one of their chief markets and old-time smuggling partners. Everybody knows what the UAE is. UAE is an ally of the United States. Could be Qatar, could be Bahrain, could be Kuwait. I happen to name those four specifically because we allocated 2 new improved Patriot missile batteries to each one of those countries with a Patriot PAC-3 on board, which is an anti-missile missile, and it's the Patriot Advanced Capability 3. That was announced really within the last 2 weeks, I believe, as we record this particular program. There's also discussion of emplacing Terminal High Altitude Air Defense, THAAD system, and there are Aegis-capable cruisers and destroyers in the Persian Gulf, Aegis capable, meaning that they now pack that Navy Standard 3 anti-ballistic missile. Why am I mentioning that? Well, you mentioned a rocket test and a missile test. That's pretty 21st century, and the Iranians have blustered about their missile capacity. Again, they rattled the sabers and pointed at Israel. Israel has a sophisticated anti-ballistic missile capability and could be backed up by U.S. ships offshore and potentially some of other systems that could be shared with the Israelis. Turkey is not off of Iran's target, nor is the old enemy, which is, I'm almost asking Dunnigan here, Mesopotamia, Iraq. You know, those, if you want to complain about those pesky Europeans, the Aryans and Aryanistan, Iran, just don't like those Semites, meaning those Semite Arabs that are over there in Mesopotamia. That's the old enemy, and that's one of our concerns, too. I mean, the U.S. troop concentrations in Iraq, that's part of the bluster and bombast, but it's also the implicit threat of the nuclear quest. By the way, I will mention two things here. Dunnigan and I talked really a couple of years ago about how quickly the Iranians could build a bomb. We said, you know, they might crash on it and produce one within 18 months. We're past that window now, but their program certainly hadn't stopped, and we really don't know what they've got with that. Secondly, let me do point our listeners to On Point, which is where we put the articles from my newspaper column on strategy page. That's where Dan referred to the Iran bombast, revolt and bombs, bombs column, which is a good background to this discussion. Now, back to Ahmadinejad. What is his follow-through? Well, you know, they do some pretty tough things. Recall what they did to the Royal Marines they captured. Of course, they capitulated to a hand and ring-kissing show, which is bombast. But at the same time, there's an implicit threat of what they could have done to the soldiers that they captured illegally. Implicit threat, look what they carry out in Iraq, playing both with Sunni and Shia radicals, the Shia special groups operating in Iraq, many of which have already been disassembled by American and Iraqi special forces. It's a nice way of saying killing a lot of them. Their leadership runs back into Iran. They're operated. They're front for Iran, and almost all Iraqis know it, and they all despise it. Did I mention the traditional enmity between the Arabs of Mesopotamia and Iran? They carry out those actions. And if you look at the November 2008 edition of A Quick and Dirty Guide to War, fourth edition, James F. Dunnigan and Austin Bay, go look in the Iran chapter and you'll see that these guys, this is the way Jim and I set it up, where they're involved in 18 different conflicts around the planet. Now, those conflicts predate Ahmadinejad, but they don't predate the communist regime, which on the February 11th is celebrating its quote-unquote 31st anniversary in power. And by the way, those 18 conflicts, that's just one way of carving it. You could actually double it or triple it, because many of those conflicts we mentioned, the Iranians are playing all sides because they are seeking to make trouble. Why do they do that? Go back to Dunnigan's point. They've had a couple, two, three, four, five, six bad centuries. They really are brittle. Didn't say they were. They are weak in many ways, but there are ways that they can be damaged, and I'm talking about the Iranian state as well as the Khomeiniist clique that runs it, the Mad Mullahs, as we sometimes call them on strategy page. But the way that they can exert themselves and force attention on themselves and wield power is a negative way, operating with terrorism, acquiring a nuclear weapon to threaten their threaten not just the United States and Europe, but threaten all of the nations around them. So, Dan, that's a more complete answer to, is he all bombast? I'll tell you, they're engaged in a lot of absolutely wicked actions in the region and in some cases around the globe. They're traced to actions you can see in Europe and in South America, other parts of Asia, and Asia is a very big place, parts of Africa. They're intimately tied with the Sudanese National Government, National Congress Party in Khartoum. That's the so-called Sudan Northern Government. They're good pals with Eritrea, in part because Eritrea, which is something of a pariah state, but Eritrea controls the Bab al-Mandab, which is the entrance between the Red Sea and the Indian Ocean, just like the Iranians control the Straits of Hormuz, the entrance between Persian Gulf and the Indian Ocean. Now, that's a nice little squeeze on the Suez Canal and also global oil tanker traffic, and also threats to Saudi Arabia and they're involved in the likely involved. I know Dunnigan has addressed this with the Yemeni rebels, who happen to be most of the tribe in north eastern Yemen. It's are Shias, aren't they, Jim? That's a
yeah.
They're Shia tribes, and the Iranians are Shia.
Another million of them across the border in Saudi Arabia. Yeah.
And they're Hamas's bankrollers. If you want to get back to the Israel-Palestinian relationship, they also the Hezbollah in southern. Southern Lebanon is a Iranian client. So overall, when you start looking and putting these pieces together, it's not just bombast. They actualize trouble. At the same time, they're so vulnerable at home. I like Jim's description of the way the population breaks down. I think I would modify it some. I think they know at some level 80% at least of the population is against them. The deal is you start carving that 80% up, and you've got some outright radicals. Some are communists. Some are monarchists. A slew of what I'll call the radicals are pro-Western style democracy, and so you've got your radicals. You've got your incrementalists, and your incrementalists are, oh, yeah, the Khomeini revolution doesn't work, but we got to reform it. Don't want to reform it too fast because, you know, we go too fast, that'd really be bad. And some of the incrementalists are not someone to sneer at. They may be clerics themselves, but they're guys who have backgrounds who they're in opposition to the dictatorships. And then you've got a reformist group. Understand all these, that's all, you know, we are Iranians first. We want reforms quickly, but reforms within our Iranian structure and, you know, democracy maybe. And this. So you've got three, and there are more flavors than that, but you've got three groups out of the monolith, I mean, the large number of people that oppose the current Khomeiniist regime, which is part of the reason that you, even though you have this sustained popular disgust and popular opposition to the dictatorship, is you haven't seen it gel into an all-out revolt, because they've got factions within the opposition, and the Khomeiniists play those factions off of one another. And there are some things that unite them. I've told you that they want reform. They're disgusted, the opponents are, with the economic stagnation. They're disgusted with the corruption. As a matter of fact, you see this out of an entire slew of Iranians saying the Shah was so corrupt. Well, guess what? The Ayatollah Khomeini's heirs now in control, they're as corrupt as the Pahlavis. That was the family of the Shah, are even more corrupt. And so they're disgusted with that. Now, there's one thing I suggest in the column I wrote this week on Strategy Page, and that is that I have seen indications, and those indications were early on, even last June and July, but more strongly so, that the opposition is appealing to Iranian nationalism, and they're trying to decouple nationalism with Khomeiniism. And that's why you have Hussein Massawi coming right out and saying, look, the Ayatollah Khomeini's revolution, it failed. It didn't produce. And look at what our situation is here in Iran. Very, very aggressive approach. Iran needs to reform. It is Iran that needs to reform. And circling around Mousavi's statements are a number of Iranians, And they're from the three rough groups that I sketched out too, in saying, you know, we don't need to be in the Islamic Republic of Iran because that's really not produced. Maybe we just need to be the Iranian Republic. And so it sounds superficial at one level, a name change, but it's one that definitely has nationalist aspirations. And that might be the way that the opposition finally solidifies and they're able to topple or move against the government. And I know Jim's going to talk about Austin. That's real hard because the mullahs have all the guns. Yeah, that's the Revolutionary Guards. February 11th, Revolutionary Guard commander says they're going to stop all the protests by the Green Movement. They're not going to allow them out in the streets. Is that a recipe for a bloodbath? Could be. Don't know. We'll know more next week.
So your response to Austin, Jim?
A lot of the kids out in the streets demonstrating are college students, high school students. These are the children of the leadership. The leadership is not all clerics. A lot of them are, you know, educated people, the people required to run the ministries and the technical people and what have you, doctors, lawyers, engineers, executives, etc. And that is particularly worrying to the clerical dictatorship, because this is the next generation of leadership. So even if they don't get the heave-ho, you know, in the next few months, years, or whatever, they're facing a generational, you know, extinction. They basically are confronting the fact that they have no future. And this has become particularly worrisome to the to the leadership, and they really have no way of turning this around. You know, the fact, as Austin pointed out, that the reform movement, which has always been, that's where, you know, the 80% figure comes from, because in the late 90s there were several free elections, and while they limited those who could run. But the most reform-minded of the clerics who ran for president got 80% of the vote, did it twice.
That was Ayatollah Khatami.
Yeah. And, again, he was one of those guys Austin was referring to as an incrementalist, you know, a guy who wanted to tinker with things and basically, you know, fix the corruption, reestablish relations with the outside world, meaning the United States. You can't say out loud that you want to, you know, improve relations with the great Satan, but that's what everybody wants. Except for the leadership.
Let me add something to that. Khatami really was for what Jim described, because Khatami made take opportunities to come to speak at the United Nations as head of Iran. He made certain that the contacts he had outside of the UN meetings with the United States is something that interested him. And of course, the dictators that didn't really want him elected, this just ticked them off at Khatami immensely. But he is an exact example of what I mean by the incrementalist. Jim said that.
The people who are most worried in Iran right now are the conservative clerics who control, you know, the center. They control the key jobs, you know, the council that basically has the final say. And elects one of their number as the chief, you know, cleric, as well as the most corrupt of the leadership. And these are, a lot of them are clerics who have enriched their own families, and they have a lot of non-clerical cronies who have become quite rich by being, you know, the toadies, as it were, of the ruling elite. And they see a bad future because they are a shrinking minority, and the majority of their children, as it were, are people in their class, either the clergy or the educated classes, are screaming for reform. And then, of course, they still have that specter of the 80% vote for reformers in the late 90s. So they don't see any way out. The only thing they have going for them is the fact that they do have the backing of a sizable minority of the population who are recruited for the Revolutionary Guards, who have guns and will use them. They are willing to die for the cause, which is something the Shah never had, at least not to that extent. And that makes it a very deadly situation. Now, a lot of Iranians are apparently inclined to just wait for things to sort of go their way. But an increasing number are willing to fight and die or get executed, as is increasingly the case. I mean, they arrested over 1,000 people since the first widespread demonstrations last summer after the June elections. And they are apparently planning to execute several dozen of those before they're through. They're putting hundreds in prison, and a lot of them are the leaders. Some of them are just poor schlubs who got caught up in it and said, all right, we need volunteers for prison duty. Boom, 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 you. It's a tragedy for these guys. You can only hope, the revolution comes along before they grow old in prison. So everybody keeps upping the ante. And those things we know from the study of history turn out badly. If the ruling class doesn't suddenly get a mind to make a deal, which often happens, especially in Iran. Iran is different from their neighbors, as it were. The Iranians are always pretty shrewd. That's why Ahmadinejad never follows up on a lot of his bluster. Indeed, one reason why Ahmadinejad is so popular is because he's basically a performer. He puts on a great show. Iranians are great fans of this. I mean, these are people who go to poetry readings, mass poetry readings, where you have poets who are rock stars, and they give these great bombastic, as we would perceive it, Westerners would perceive it, poetry readings. Well, this is what Ahmadinejad is doing. It is one of those cultural differences that, it gets lost in the translation. Iranians respect this, and Ahmadinejad is basically a great political poet. He's running some great lines there. He's saying, I'm going to clean up, the corruption. Now, he can't do that. He tried to do that, and he got slapped back. He started cracking down on people who were really basically stealing money, enriching themselves, and the senior clergy, slapped him down pretty quickly. We reported that in Strategy Page. But Ahmadinejad, I think in the long run will get credit for keeping the game going. So he comes up, well, let's put a couple of, mice and turtles into orbit. They didn't even put him into orbit. Of course, this is something that they could have done years ago with the missiles they had. And, of course, Russia and the United States did it over half a century ago. But, hey, most Iranians are not students of the space programs in other countries. And they say, this is great. I feel better. But this is all just palliatives, for a dying patient, the dying patient being the clerical dictatorship. And the guys who are more sober-minded at the top realize their time is up and it may be up soon. I mean, all we really have to, it's not a question of if, but when. And what the big concern is, and to people in the State Department and the American Defense Department and in Western European counterparts, is this going to be messy? And of course, that's why the nuclear weapons are such a big concern, because if we wait and they develop nuclear weapons and then the revolution comes and says, oh my God, we got nukes in play, that's a big concern in North Korea, which is further down the road, to internal dismemberment. And they have nuclear weapons facilities. That's always been the fear in Pakistan, a country that's been coming apart, since the day it was put together. And this is something that is something that's been going on for centuries, but it now becomes more of a danger because there are things like nuclear weapons, in that scrum, in that furball, and we don't know who's going to run off with those, if before the thing, settles down. That is the big danger.
Now, one of the things that I found interesting in the press, and who knows if this is true or not, was that Russia seemed to be more concerned about this launch than other launches, and like you said, the other launches never had mice on them, but they were going up pretty darn high and had extreme ranges. What game is Russia playing right now?
Well,
saying, oh yeah, we're more concerned.
Well, Russia in general is more concerned when they began to realize that what I just described, the Iranians are apparently on the road to getting nuclear weapons, and Iran is a neighbor of Russia. They share a border. They share a history, not a very pleasant one. The Russians all of a sudden are saying, oh my God, they were willing to make a buck, sell nuclear power plants, sell them, weapons that may not work too well. But now they're concerned that Iran could come apart and some real whack job. In other words, if there were a revolution and it were put down, you would basically have even more hardline clerics in charge. Because within the government of Iran, there are numerous factions. And what it basically comes down to is the real wackos, you know, the Islamic radicals, they have their own faction. They control various sections of the government. They are allowed to do certain things. These were the guys behind the Iranian weapons being found in Iraq. Eventually, they were slapped down through a combination effort between American special forces and the senior clerics, who basically said, "Look, these Americans, they're getting more aggressive against you and perhaps against us." There was a period of time when American and British special forces were crossing the border to deal with this problem. And at that point, the clerics, this is back in 06 and 07, at this point, the senior clerics said, and they basically had the fear of more of these Western, you know, commandos operating inside of Iran, where apparently the Iranians were not able to, you know, control these SAS and Delta Force, whatever. And they were able to convince their own, radical to, all right, let's back off. But there are other places, you know, where they basically let them run riot. For example, just recently, just in the last week, Fatah, which controls the West Bank in the Palestinian territories, removed all anti-Iranian propaganda from their websites. What does that tell you? Somebody's made a deal. Fatah has made a deal with Iran. The Quds force basically runs that. These are the Islamic radicals, one of the sections that the Islamic radicals within the Iranian government control. Now, if there were a big shakeup in Iran, a civil war, whatever, who would be the people the leadership would call on? They're radicals. These are the guys that can absolutely depend upon to kill and kill without stopping to stop the revolution. And when all the dust settled, who would have more power in the Iranian government? The radicals, the guys who saved the revolution. And the Russians see this as a nightmare scenario, because one of the beefs the radicals have is with Russia. The nightmare scenario for the Russians is that all of a sudden the Quds force decides to get more active in the Caucasus, in Chechnya, in Dagestan, in Ingushetia, all these places where there are right now relatively small Islamic radical groups, you know, running terrorist operations. Well, what if they had a lot of support from Iran? And what if the Iranians decided to provide them with nuclear weapons or chemical weapons or God knows what? So all of a sudden the Russians are against Iranian or in favor of more sanctions against Iran. And now, of course, the Iranians are depending more on the Chinese, who don't give a damn what those people to the West do to each other and just want that oil.
Right. And I was going to bring that up, is what was China's involvement. And also Pakistan, and the reason I bring up both China and Pakistan, is it likely that China and Pakistan are providing technical assistance to the Iranians?
Yes, apparently they have.
Which is not a good thing.
No, but for the Chinese, it's money.
Right.
And then the Chinese, if there is a revolution, the Chinese will be there, you know, after the smoke is cleared, saying, "Hey, we're still your friends. We want to do deals."
Right, we want to buy oil.
Yeah, right. And they'll basically try and make an offer. You know, the reformers can't refuse. The reformers may be trying to say, "Well, Chinese are customers." You know, the Chinese say, "Hey, it was just business."
Right.
Just like Don Corleone. Nothing personal.
Dan, I have a suggestion. Let's come back to this in a couple of weeks and see
what's happened.
See what happened on the 11th and some of the, because this is going to be, it's been simmering. It may be boiling again.
Yeah,
a little color commentary on whatever.
Right. Yeah. In fact,
out on the 11th.
That would be great. We can come back in exactly 2 weeks and we'll pick this up where we were leaving it off today. It is time for us to close up. So I'll say goodbye to you gentlemen and have a great week.
Thank you,
David.
All right, bye.